Hello and welcome to Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney. You can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes at seandelaney.com/podcasts. This week I'm pleased to bring you the second part of my interview with Siobhan Keenan Fitzgerald, who has developed a programme to promote public speaking among children called Let's Stand. Siobhan, who has implemented the programme in the school in which she is principal, says that for many who fear public speaking, that initial act of standing up to speak may be the hardest thing they have to do. On last week's programme, Siobhan told us about the difference between public speaking and debating, about how a presentation she gave in Japanese to a group of Japanese tea ladies reinforced for her the power of public speaking, and how she began implementing principles of Toastmasters in her teaching. Siobhan also noted that as children became better at public speaking, it helped them in other areas of the English curriculum. In this second part of our interview, I asked Siobhan if she could tell me more about how she connected other genres from the English curriculum with public speaking in her teaching.
I suppose the different topics that I've outlined for the different class levels that came up with them from the curriculum. I looked through the curriculum for the different class levels, and not just the literacy, the language curriculum, but I looked across the curriculum into history, SESE, SPHE, and saw how could I pull topics out of that that the students could speak about. So then once the students have spoken about those topics, then I've linked the topic to whether it's a narrative, whether it's explanatory, whether it's a report, what form of writing it could be linked to. And that could go into another subject altogether. And similarly with reading, the different skills that could be applied based on those particular topics.
And getting back to, say, I mean, you've talked about senior infants, you even do this with junior infants, isn't that right?
Oh, yes.
So can you tell, what is it like to see a junior infant public speaking?
Oh, wow. It's fantastic. They really are fearless, because we start with just teaching them the address. So when they stand up there, that they say classmates, teachers, friends, and they use their hand gestures. We tell them about their facial expressions, their smile. We train them how to walk to the podium proudly, doing a proud walk, then standing at the lectern. And classmates, teachers, friends, good morning. Today I'm going to talk about. But at this stage, having done that a few times, they know that completely off by heart. And I've seen many of the junior infants now stand up and say all of that perfectly. And then not have a clue where they're going next, but being perfectly happy to stand there because of the amount of attention that they're getting. And I haven't seen any hesitation in any of the junior infants yet to get up. Well, they mightn't have been the first to jump up, but when they see a few of their friends doing it, and the thing is the positive feedback, what we do is once they've completed their presentations, which could be the initial one is just say three things about yourself. So it could be, today I'm going to talk about me. My name is Siobhan. I have five brothers. I live in Galway. Thank you for listening. So they know the beginning and they know the end, and then they're down. But immediately we get in with, okay, three pieces of positive feedback. What did you notice? And we keep it positive. And at that stage, we would have introduced them to the different focuses. Okay, it could be hand gestures, it could be facial expression. Did you like the proud walk? At first, you know, we would allow them to say something like, I loved your hand gestures, classmates, teachers, friends, or I loved your smile. But as they go on, and again, child specific, if we know the child is capable of more, we'll try and draw it out of them. Well, be specific. What exactly was it about the hand gestures? Were they strong? What did you notice? What point of the speech did they use the hand gestures? So to try and, you know, make sure that they are paying attention, because some of them might just think, okay, I'll just say hand gestures. Or just a structure. Yeah, structure. I liked that. So, you know, just being careful to make sure that we're challenging each student at their own level. And teachers are great at that anyway. Teachers know their students very well. And because somebody from the outside could come in and hear a student give a speech and think, whoa, that's brilliant. But the teacher might know, hang on, no, they could have done a little bit better. I know they didn't prepare as well, and will know where to draw their attention to next. And that's, you know, we've a great bunch of teachers like that.
If we go for the other extreme, a sixth class child, public speaking, what does that look like? Or what does that sound like, I suppose, if you'd ask?
Well, I suppose in many ways I'm more familiar with that at the moment because I was a senior room teacher when I began to use the programme in my class, and I had fourth, fifth and sixth class multigrade in a small school. And what I began to introduce into the school as well was that for the graduation ceremony every year, that instead of the teacher standing up to speak about the students, that the students would use one of the Let's Stem projects to speak about themselves. And one of the projects feeds very nicely into that. It's my memories of primary school and what moving on to secondary school means to me. This year, for example, all of the students got up and made their presentations. I find it mind-blowing to see that students who might not be that good at writing or reading or might not be excelling in other areas or the more traditional ways, well, certainly the areas that they would be tested in with regard to standardized tests or things like that, but how well they can connect with a speech. And when they know that, when they're getting that feedback, they do grow, and that you can see their confidence blossoming in front of you. I had one student in particular who in his first speech he had used humour so well and in such a deadpan way. Which is extremely difficult. People don't realise it is not that easy. But he used it in such a deadpan way. It shocked me into an immediate reaction. I couldn't control myself with the laughter. And eventually the tears started to come and it stopped his speech. And he was looking at me wondering, what on earth? And the rest of the students were looking. But every speech after that, he always had at least one good gag in it, because he knew he could get me on it, and it was always his aim to make me cry because I'd cried with laughter. But what I loved about that student, and I've seen it with other students as well, was he had told me he came from a disadvantaged background, and afterwards I said to him, I said, did you really come up with that joke yourself? I said, it was brilliant, did you really? And he said, no, I have to tell the truth. No, my aunt told me to throw that in. I said, oh, so your aunt was working with you on this? And this is a child that previously mightn't even have been doing his homework for reading and writing. And here he has his family involved in doing homework and an oral presentation. I thought, this is good. This is good. And so I do know after that, having spoken to his mother and his father, that they always got a great kick out of helping him prepare for his oral presentations. And I thought, look, if that's one of the side effects, that it's getting communication going, that they're having a bit of banter about it, and they're shown that they're interested in his education, it's an element of his education that they're interested in. Well, he got up in his graduation speech this year. I wasn't the only person he made cry. And that's the beauty of public speaking. He had us in tears, connected to laughter at times. He had us kind of shocked and, oh, not too sure if he can say that, but he's just said it. And other times amazed at some of the language that he was using. The lovely language, wonderful language. And at the very end, oh, his ending was just unbelievable. This year, our school has actually been selected as a change-making school. And I know the public speaking that we do is one of the elements that feeds into that. And this boy would have attended an interview for a changemaker school earlier in the year, but he managed to tie it all back around, and he said, I know that we're a changemaking school and our aim is to empower children to be changemakers, but really when I look back at my time here in this school, there's not a lot I would change. And it just got me. I thought, and that's being able to touch somebody like that without physically touching them, that is an art, and that's invaluable. It's a brilliant skill to have. And that's something that I've seen develop in him naturally, just because of his engagement and his constant practice. So he's definitely one person that comes to mind when I think of the sixth class now. I wouldn't like teachers to be feeling stressed out, thinking, but I'm not really into public speaking myself. And if I'm supposed to be modelling it, wow, I don't know if I can do that. But there's so many examples on the internet now. There's plenty of examples of children themselves public speaking, that one of those could be used as an example at the beginning of a lesson. And I remember when I first introduced the students to the idea of using quotations at the beginning, maybe as an opener or as an ending, well, for the next few presentations, there was nothing but quotations. And that's what they'll do. They'll explore and they'll play around with them. And, you know, it's amazing what they will come up with. And that's been a really beneficial side effect as well. It's really spiced up my own teaching, to be honest, and it's made it more fun for myself, because part of this is really handing the power over to the students and sitting back that little bit yourself. Really, it's just up to us to create the environment, a safe, supportive environment where the children can feel safe to get up and express themselves, to openly evaluate each other. A fair bit of work has to go into the creation of that environment, but once it's created, then it's quite amazing just to watch the learning taking place.
So you actually get the children to watch the speeches of others, of experienced public speakers, as part of the programme, do you?
What I've done within the programme as well is I've listed off interesting speeches that I've come across that could be integrated with some of the topics. I haven't come across a speech for everyone, but I'm sure, you know, even for teachers, that if they Googled it or went on to TED and searched under those categories. But I have used examples. And when I was starting the programme first with my class, I came across a video of a kid called Dalton Sherman in America.
I think there's a link to that on your website.
There's a link, yeah. He's 10 years old and he's given a speech to 2,000 people. From different areas of education in Boston, I think it is. And when I saw it first, I was just quite amazed, because he's just so accomplished but so confident, and he's just up on the stage having the time of his life. And it was interesting because I actually took that video and I showed it to a group of teachers first, and I said to them, I said, he's 10 years old, do you think our students could do that? And it was very mixed feedback. Mostly negative, not sure, no. And one comment that stayed in my mind was, well, you know, that's America. And that hit me, because I thought, hang on, I had a 10-year-old myself at that time, and I thought, that's America, but that's the internet, and this is the world. And this is a child that my child will be in competition with for a job in the future. I want my child to be able to do that. I want him to be able to compete. And I know that that's a skill that will stand him in good stead when he goes on to college, secondary school, college, out into the workforce. So anyway, I wasn't deterred. I then showed it to a group of students and I asked them the same question. And they were from 9 to 12 years old, that group. And I said to them, I said, do you think that you could do that? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So that's the difference in our perspectives. Yeah. Now, there might have been one or two, but it wasn't the loudest voices. And it was funny after that then, because we quoted him and we used a few of his lines to begin our own speeches, where he says at the beginning, do you believe in me? Do you believe in me? Well, I believe in me. And then classmates, teachers, friends. And I thought, look, from what I've heard, it takes 20 times of doing something for it to become a habit. So I thought, if I can get them saying this 20 times, it'll become ingrained. And this is what they need to do. They need to believe in themselves and know that they can do it and get up there and give it a try. You're not going to die.
You're a teaching principal, Siobhan.
Yeah.
How did you get buy-in from your colleagues into this programme?
Well, I have to say, I have a fantastic staff and they're always eager to try new ideas. They're very interested in continuous professional development and very supportive of each other. I suppose I also knew at the time when I decided to introduce it, we had been doing our school self-evaluation. And just coincidentally from that, now in the background I had been working quietly on the programme, but out of the school self-evaluation, it became very apparent that the area we had to focus on in literacy was oral language. So this opened the room for discussion about it. And I was quite open with the staff. They know I'm a member of Toastmasters. And I said, this is a question that I have and I'm wondering why we don't do more of this. And that particular year, I said, well, I'll try it with my class and see what's possible. You know, it's not going to do any harm. It's actually still going to be covering some of the objectives of the oral language curriculum.
How long ago was this?
This is about 2.5, 3 years ago. We're doing it fully throughout the school for the last 2 years. When I saw what the students could do, what I started to do then was ask some of the students from my class to do a presentation at assembly. So that was extending it to the rest of the school so that all of the students could see it, all of the teachers could see it. And in that way, I think seeing is believing. Look, it's possible. These students can do it. Because many, not so much the teachers in my own school, but I've had many teachers say that public speaking is not their thing, but they do it every day. Having said that, I'm very aware standing in front of a group of children and a group of adults are very different things.
And the idea of the change-making school, could you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, change-maker school, that actually came up during the year. It was brought to my attention by a temporary teacher that we had in the school who asked, were we a change-making school? And I didn't realise there was an actual organisation or a particular group called change-making. I said, I know we do try and make changes for the children, but... So I looked into it, and it's an organisation, Ashoka. They're social innovators who have named schools throughout the world. It's a global organisation as change-making schools. Now, the four pillars are leadership, creativity, empathy, and team. So if you have particular programmes in your school that feed into those areas, or really it's the whole ethos of the school, the whole culture of the school. And it's about empowering, if you're clearly empowering the children to make changes in their own lives. It's not about any individual member of staff. It's definitely not about me. It's not about the principal. It's not about one leader. It's about disseminated leadership throughout the school where people are taking the lead in different areas. And that could be a staff member, could be a teacher, it could be an SNA. In our school, our SNA does fantastic work. We have a sensory garden that the children have developed. And children taking the lead as well. So what we've had as an upshot as well from Let's Stand, in the last year, we've had some of the senior room students lead assembly. Because many of them have done all their 10 presentations that is recommended in the programme for the year. So I thought, what else can they do now? And certainly the sixth class students, I thought, they can do my job now. And I can sit down and I can enjoy it. Now, some of them probably could have led the assembly without too much guidance, because it's generally the same structure we follow every week. But what I did was made out a template of what they should cover, what comes first, what comes in the middle, and then how do you wrap it all up? And then to use a story, maybe a funny story. If you could tell a joke, great, get the whole school on side. That's what we've been doing. And because of that, we were nominated as a change-making school. We had visits from Ashoka fellows during the year to actually see if what we said we were doing was what we were doing. And then based on that, a team from the school had to attend an interview in St. Pat's. So I went with an SNA and a parent and some students. This year they've selected 3 in Ireland. So we were selected. So in all in Ireland at the moment, there's 12 change-making schools. But what's fantastic about it is that it's putting us in contact with like-minded people.
And as you say, one area of that is the public speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. We would have a lot of students from disadvantaged backgrounds. And I suppose traditionally, one of the things that was said to me in relation to the programme was that public speaking often seemed to be a skill that was only taught to a certain group of people, that it's often only an elite group that seemed to take to it. And when I reflect on my own school days, I think, well, it was kind of the smartest children that were taken out and said, yeah, you'll be good at debating. Now, some of the children that mightn't have been achieving as well academically, they were very good talkers. And if they'd been given a little bit of support and help, could have been a lot better than I was. But so it was kind of an exclusive group. But what I began to see was, if we could open this up and give it to every child, then you're empowering children to be leaders within their own communities, to be able to stand up and be an advocate for their own families, their own particular group. And certainly in some of the students that I've seen, that particular boy I was talking about in sixth class, I would be very disappointed if I don't see him within a few years being a voice for his own family, his own community, because I think he's learned that what he has to say is important. Hopefully that's what he'll have got from us. And not only that, but he can say it extremely well. And he can touch people and he can get his message across
Do you think it's something that has a practical application for children while they're children, or is it something that really the benefits of them, the benefits for them will be when they're older?
I think it has a practical, a bit of both. The practical application for the moment is, while they're younger, is definitely confidence building. It's definitely confidence building. It has the potential to shift their mindset in a more positive way, to be able to identify quickly what they're doing well and build on it. And also, it's in terms of communication, it requires them to communicate with each other. And it deepens, I really believe it deepens their learning, because the research says that children learn most what they hear in their own voices, and then next what they hear in their peers' voice, and then next what they hear in the teacher's voice. This is within the classroom. But up until recently, and certainly maybe even still in many classrooms, I know it was the case in my own classroom, it was my voice that dominated all the time. So if we actively provide opportunities for more talking by the children themselves, they learn from their own voices and then from their peers, it can't but deepen their learning and I think help them engage with the curriculum a lot more personally. So the topics are quite personal but linked to the curriculum, which is very important. So that would be the benefits at the moment. Obviously, long term, you know, what we're hearing with the new junior cert is that there's going to be a lot more oral presentations. Now, are these skills going to be just taught when they go into primary or into first year? Would it not benefit building on those skills at a time when they don't have the inhibitions of teenaging years going on? I know my own daughter at the moment has just finished her first year in secondary school, and I'm thankful that at least I had 1 year in primary school of her doing presentations, because she doesn't want it now. At the moment she doesn't want it. There's too much going on in
self-consciousness,
and it's, you know, it's terrible. And I'm thinking, you know, if students had done 10 presentations a year throughout all of their primary school, even still they would probably go through 1 or 2 years of not wanting to speak in secondary school. But the foundation would have been built already, so it'll be there to fall back on. And that's what I'm hoping will happen with my daughter, because I know she can do it. And the reason I know she can do it is because she did it. And she did it time and time again. And she's very aware of the different tools that are at her disposal, because you have to be when you're feeding back on a regular basis to and you hear it from yourself, you hear it from others, you hear the terminologies, hand gestures, body language, negative body language, positive body language. So I can't imagine that it won't resonate with her when she does have to stand up in front of a group, whether it's for the junior cert or not. And then I began to think then as well, even for oral exams in secondary school, and it struck me, we prepare students for their oral French exam, their oral Irish exam, but whoever prepared us for an oral English exam? Whoever prepared us for an interview? Whoever prepared us for a conversation? And I suppose some people would say years ago this came a lot more naturally because we played more outdoors, we had bigger families, we had to survive, survival of the fittest. So I suppose a tiny part of my motivation with regard to this programme as well was the whole improvement of communication skills, because I see my own children, I know they definitely don't communicate face-to-face as much as I used to as children. Having said that, I'm a great fan of technology as well, but I just see it as there being a need to make sure that we develop their communication skills hand-in-hand with technology and not focus just exclusively on one area. And I think if we don't do it explicitly, it won't just happen incidentally, because my children would prefer not to be bothered, not to have to talk to one another. They would send each other a message before they would communicate face to face, unless we require it of them and we teach them the skills and the tools and the techniques.
You have presented on this topic, Siobhan, in the TEDx in Galway.
Right.
Can you envisage some kind of a variation, presumably, on the TED format that would be presented solely by children?
That's exactly one of the ideas that was going through my mind. I thought it would be so easy to do in many ways. I thought, talk about a global classroom. It could really open up a global classroom. I actually saw there was one event in India where there was a children's TED, I don't know, it was TEDx event. And I began to think, of course, it would be fantastic. A mini TED or a kids TED. Definitely, I reckon it will happen soon. I'm sure it will. Obviously, I suppose there's certain precautions about putting any videos up online and all of that. But yeah, definitely. Children are already involved in TED and TEDx. So with regard to having a mini channel, I think it would be fantastic. You could have children talking on topics from the curriculum. Imagine just being able to hear a child from Ethiopia or Saudi Arabia talk about their life, or a child from Syria, or rather than just reading that from a book. Anything is possible. It would be amazing. And I think it will only be a matter of time, and probably a short few years before it happens.
Siobhan, if someone is interested in finding out more about the Let's Stand programme or about public speaking in primary schools in general, where can they find more information?
Well, they can find more information by going to the website. That's www.letsstand.eu. Also, they could contact me directly if they wanted. My email address is fitzsiobhan@hotmail.com. And I'd be delighted to talk to anybody who'd like more information, and I can offer support and help in whatever way.
And that offer of support and help for teachers who want to develop public speaking with their classes comes from this week's guest, Siobhan Keenan Fitzgerald. I asked Siobhan after the interview why she called the programme Let's Stand rather than Let's Speak. And this was her response. The programme is about playing with practicing and perfecting all the tools that good public speakers use to get their message across, like body language, facial expression, hand gestures, pause, use of props and so on. For Siobhan, stand is a powerful verb. It touches on the empowering potential of public speaking. It's also like that first initial decision to engage with public speaking. And I want to thank Siobhan Keenan Fitzgerald for her time in recording the interview. My own new book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, which was recently published by Routledge, is available now for purchase online, in bookshops, or from me directly. I'd love to receive your feedback. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to me by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can find links to over 260 previous programmes at seandelaney.com/podcasts. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.